Well, last week we began a new sermon series entitled Faith Walk. And as I began, I said it's true for all of us. We all like stories that inspire. Stories that say to us, you know what, it can be done. It is possible that I am not alone. And even though or even when there are those things, those people who went before us, that we're courageous, that we're bold, that stepped out in faith, and God worked through them in very special ways. And so our focus between now and Easter is on this 11th chapter of the book of Hebrews. It's filled with people of faith, people who just trusted God with their lives from all different situations and all different trials and tests they went through. But the one thing it is true is that God worked in amazing ways through them. So what is faith? One thing that we said last week is faith is not blind. Sometimes we think, well, faith is just, you just hope for something. Well, no, we don't have a blind faith. Biblical faith is not blind. Biblical faith is objective. It's faith in something. And it's not about the sincerity or the intensity in us, but rather it's outside of us. It's something that's given to us. Our faith is in a person. It's in Jesus Christ. And he has shown himself to be reliable. He's shown himself to be worthy of our complete and total trust and confidence. And we trust in his promises to us. You know, as I've been working on this, and I was particularly the last few days just reflecting back on the past year, particularly a year ago, in my daily planner, I usually jot down just kind of various things that happened throughout the day. And I was looking at almost exactly a year ago, in, you know, February and March, at the things that I was kind of dealing with and going through, whether it was personal with family things or just things going on here at the church and with COVID coming and all those kind of things. And in all seriousness, I look back and say, how did I do this? What happened? Because in all seriousness, I was wondering, how could I have done all those things in just that particular day? The decisions that had to be made or things that were going on. And looking back, there is only one explanation. And that's the strength or the wisdom or the help or the guidance that Christ gave me and his Spirit gave. God being faithful to his promises, who came alongside and did his work. It's the only explanation I can have when I look at a few of the days, in particular, last year. So today, we're in Hebrews chapter 11 again, verses 4 through 7. And this is what the writer says as he calls us to look back at some people of faith. He says, beginning in verse 4, "By faith, Abel brought God a better offering than Cain did. By faith, he was commended as righteous when God spoke well of his offerings. And by faith, Abel still speaks, even though he is dead. By faith, Enoch was taken from this life so that he did not experience death. He could not be found because God had taken him away. For before he was taken, he was commended as one who pleased God. And without faith, it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. By faith, Noah, when warned about things not yet seen, in holy fear built an ark to save his family. By his faith, he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness that is in keeping with faith." Three different people who became examples of people who walked in faith and trust in God. There was just this confidence in who he was. Abel, Enoch, and Noah. So last week our focus was even though they had not yet received it, they lived as if they had. Today, it's even when. They may have been the only one, but yet they just lived faithfully because it was on their heart, because of their love and trust and confidence in God, even when they just did what their heart was led to do by the power of the Spirit. So what we see in verses today are really contrasts between faith and unbelief. The first person we examine here is Abel. And the whole story about Abel is given in Genesis chapter 4, verses 1 through 15. Who's Abel? Abel is the second born son of Adam and Eve. The firstborn was Cain. And the story goes there in Genesis that they both came and they offered up sacrifices to God. Now, the writer of Hebrews says Abel offered up a better sacrifice than Cain did. Now, there's no evidence whatsoever that there was some kind of a competition between the two brothers as to who could give a better sacrifice, but they did independently. They just did their thing. They brought sacrifices before God. And what they brought reflected what they did. It says Abel kept flocks, so he brought an animal. Cain worked the soil, so he brought grain. And it's not so much the what they brought, but how they brought what they did. So the idea is you don't look at the gift necessarily, let's look at the giver and the heart of the giver. It says in Genesis that Abel brought fat portions of the firstborn. But for Cain, it says, he just brought some. Abel bringing the best reflected his faith and where his heart was. Cain bringing just some expresses he did it only because maybe it was expected. I guess I got to do this. But it was not brought in faith or desiring to bring the best before God. Abel trusted and loved God. And it was demonstrated through the way in which he brought his offering. And then we see the consequences. Because God had made a comment about how he saw these two things. And Cain becomes incredibly jealous and bitter towards his brother. And God even steps in to warn him about where his heart's at and where it's leading. Cain chooses not to listen. And Cain ends up literally killing his brother Abel. It's tragic. It's the first murder recorded in the Bible. But even after his death, Abel stands as a witness. He is spoken about as a righteous person who lived by faith. And we are called to seek the Lord and be faithful to him even when. It's interesting that the Apostle John reflects back on this story in his letter. And he says in 1 John 3, speaking about Cain in particular, he says, "And why did he murder him? Because his own actions were evil and his brothers were righteous." And then he says, "Do not be surprised, my brothers and sisters, if the world hates you." Interesting reflection. Here's what I've observed in life. If you just live with your love of God, you want to follow God, you want to be obedient to God, you just want to live a righteous life, or you want to live a life of integrity or in truth, and you want to work hard, and you want to just do what you feel is the right thing to do. Here's the thing. There will always be those Cains that don't like you. There will always be the people who become envious or jealous of the people who maybe because they have worked hard or done certain things, they don't like that. But even when we just go on about living our life for Christ, for God, and that's what Abel did. He didn't He wasn't trying to outdo his brother or prove a point. He just lived faithfully, and it was reflected in his life. And that's why thousands of years later, he is pulled out as an example of someone who just, even when, he just did what he felt God called him to do. The next person is a man called Enoch. Now, there's no story given about Enoch per se, just comments about him in this long genealogy that shows up in Genesis chapter 5. And he was one who pleased God, and it says Enoch walked faithfully with God. He trusted God, and again, it was reflected just in the way he lived. And it says he walked with God. Well, what does that mean, you walk with God? I just take that to mean that you do life as if God's right alongside of you. It's just living with this awareness that you're not alone, that God's with you. His presence is always there. You can talk with him and share with him and just have this living relationship with God, knowing that he's around you and with you. And it says Enoch just lived a normal life, raising sons and daughters, but his entire life was characterized by his love of God. Now, it's interesting if you were to read the entire chapter of chapter 5 of Genesis, and it's written to prove, to make a point. For each person, it's like a genealogy, and it says, well, this person was born, and then they got married, they had sons and daughters, and then they died. And then the next person, they were born, they got married, they had sons and daughters, and they died. And over and over and over it says, and he died, and he died, and he died, making a point again of the consequences of sin. But then we come upon this person, Enoch, and the way his story ends, it just says, God took him. God took him. And then inserted in the brief account is a statement about faith. Here by the author of Hebrews in verse 6, Hebrews 11, 6. And it says, without faith it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. In other words, faith is necessary. Those who come before God, just again, obviously acknowledging that he exists and that God is gracious, that we can trust him, that we can have confidence in who he is. What's pleasing to God? Just recognizing God's presence alongside of us and just saying, God, I just want to trust you. I look to you for what I need and who I am and all these things. Just recognizing that. That's pleasing to God. Someone who just lives life with their understanding, I need God. And look at this promise, he's alongside of me. And then there's Noah, the third person. And talk about being convinced of things not yet seen. He's one person who demonstrated his faith in God in a world completely of unbelief. And God looked at Noah and with his grace chose him for a very special work. And it says he too walked with God. He trusted God. God informed him of things not seen, about something that would happen way off in the future. And God told him the world was going to be destroyed by a flood, and he put a call on him to build an ark. And here's Noah. He lives on dry land, may probably have never seen the sea. And yet when he was warned by God about what would come, he just started building. And it says, holy fear put him into action. And for years and years and years, he built. Almost alone in a totally corrupt world, he just trusted God and his promises. And Noah ultimately was saved not only from the waters of the flood, but also from hell through faith in God's promises. He just faithfully did what God had called him to do. And I think particularly with Noah, I can't help but just sit and think and imagine what he must have endured over those years. The harassment he must have taken, the opposition he must have been up against over and over for years and years and years. And I can't help but wonder, and he probably did, had all the moments of doubt and times of discouragement. There he is, almost standing alone in the middle of this incredibly hostile world. To believe in God among fellow believers is relatively easy. But to have no one to really lean on except God is a true sense of faith. On one side, he's expressing his reverence for God. On the other hand, he was terrified because of the coming destruction. And if he had not believed the warning, if he was not, in a sense, afraid of what was to come, why would he do what he did year after year after year? He just had this trust of what God had said, what was going to happen, and who God was alongside of him. And faith just kept driving him to keep at it. Obediently, he followed the plan, constructing the ark, demonstrating his confidence in God. And his faith became a testimony. And he truly stood in contrast to the unbelieving world around him. I've been thinking a lot about that more recently, just because of the things that I see and probably you see and hear going on in the world around us these days. There's a lot of stuff going on in the world around us these days. Over the years, I've read a lot of books. Certain ones have more of an impact than others. And I think this one book I recently read has had an incredible, profound impact, and just because it so dials into what's going on in our world today. It's a book called Live Not by Lies. Live Not by Lies by Rod Dreher. What kind of a book is this? It's a book about people. People particularly, this is almost testimonial and words of encouragement about people really who lived through communism. And interviews he had with people all over that part of the world that experienced communism and all of its horrificness. So they're words of warning, but also words of encouragement about people who got through and how they got through difficult times in life. But the one thing is true, when you look back at how communism took over certain parts of the world, it all started by people coming after people of faith. This is one thing that Dreher says in his introduction to the book, and talk about being relevant for today. You can never be sure when those in power will come after you as a villain for having said something that was perfectly fine the day before. And the consequences for violating the new taboos are extreme, including losing your livelihood and having your reputation ruined forever. Powerful mechanisms are created for controlling thought and discourse and marginalizing dissenters as evil. More and more today, the word is used here, it's thought crimes. The mere fact that you have those thoughts, you're evil and should be canceled or silenced just because you have the thoughts. And then talking about the harsh condemnation that's going on to just silence people, to intimidate people into silence. And he uses the term throwing electronic stones at people through social media just to quiet people down that may have different views. But he ends the book basically by saying this statement: only in solidarity with others can we find the spiritual and communal strength to resist. It's when people of faith join together and support and pray and encourage one another when times are rough, when forms of persecution are there, where people are trying to be squashed per se, the strength that you get when you're not alone. And I think at times we do feel like we're all alone in the world at times. And when we feel like we're all alone, I think of Noah again, I think, you know, the doubts that can come in. Am I really right? Should I really be believing this? I think where I sit and ponder, and I think it's for all of us, you know, what would Abel tell us if he were here today? And we're in those times. What would Abel say to us? Or what would Enoch say to us? Or what would Noah say to encourage us when we feel discouraged? True pioneers, these men stood almost virtually alone in their contest of faith. And I think for every one of these, at least the three, and for all of them we're going to be looking at as we continue on, every one of them, in a sense, we're told by God, have courage. I'm with you. I'm going to go with you. So don't be afraid. Jesus told his disciples, take heart, I have overcome the world. Jesus, the very last statement he made to his followers before he ascended into heaven was, I will be with you always to the very end. So even when, the promise for all of you today, God's with you. You are not alone. We are not alone. And knowing that so many faithful people who have gone before us crossed the finish line and God worked in special ways through it all is an encouragement to us that how much we need one another, how much we need to encourage and pray for one another and just be there as we go through life. But even when and even though, God is always faithful. He shows it and demonstrates it each and every day. The promise we hold on to. So now may the peace of God, which passes all understanding, keep your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus.